This is Medicaid Leadership Exchange, a podcast where Medicaid directors and other guests get frank about what it's like to steward the nation's largest health insurance program. Through Medicaid and the Children's Health Insurance Program, 56 agencies administer a complex web of programs that provide access to essential health services. Listen in as we explore some of the challenges Medicaid leaders navigate and their top priorities to deliver services and build health.
Welcome to today's podcast conversation. Today, Mark and I have the pleasure of talking with two individuals who have a lens on the dynamics of the federal-state partnership that undergirds Medicaid that very few people have. Today's guests are Medicaid leaders who have served at the federal and state level, giving them broader perspective on the benefits and challenges of the partnership that is truly foundational to the success of the Medicaid program. Calder Lynch served as the CMCS director for the first Trump administration, and before that was the Medicaid director in Nebraska and also worked in the Louisiana Medicaid program. Drew Wilson is currently the Medicaid director of Delaware, but before that worked in the CMCS Division of Managed Care Policy. As we get to know Calder and Drew, we will learn more about their experience, their perspective on the federal-state partnership, and some of the fundamental aspects of maintaining healthy, productive collaboration between federal and state leaders. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Mark to kick off the panel discussion.
Jamie, thank you. Calder and Drew, welcome to our podcast. We're grateful to have you with us today. I'm wondering if we could start by asking each of you, and Calder, maybe I'll ask you to kick us off. Can you just tell us about your career paths and your work at both the state and federal levels? And maybe specifically, can you tell us how that experience informed your work as you moved between those levels?
Well, thanks, Mark, and thanks, Jamie. It's great to be here on the podcast, and I love the idea of being able to bring leaders together in this forum to share about the experiences we've had, you know, working and to serve these programs, and hopefully help inform folks that are in the trenches today. As you mentioned, I've had the opportunity and really the distinct privilege to kind of work in Medicaid on all sides of the program. I am from Louisiana originally. I was born and raised there, went to school there, and actually started working for the Department of Health pretty much right out of college as a legislative liaison. And that's where I really cut my teeth on the complexities of healthcare policy, but also saw firsthand the impact that, you know, those programs had on people's lives and really the speed at which we could implement changes that could have a distinct impact and improvement in the way that these programs were serving people. So I fell in love immediately. I really was impassioned by the work that we did and spent about 7 years in Louisiana in a variety of policy focused roles during a time in which we were implementing tremendous reforms, the implementation of managed care for the first time, the integration of our pharmacy and behavioral health benefits into those programs, kicking off work around long-term care reform, just really meaty stuff, right, that has a tremendous impact on the programs that serve a lot of different people. I had the opportunity from there to then move up to Nebraska and serve as a state Medicaid director, which was an incredible experience. I think anyone who's had that job, as I know all of us on this podcast have had that privilege, and Drew has it today, recognize that it's probably the best job you'll ever have. It's also probably sometimes the hardest, but it really is a job in which it requires this sort of this unique perspective of someone who can be an operator, someone who can manage an effective team, and someone that can manage externally effective, because there's so many external forces that come to play in how the programs operate, providers, advocates, legislators, right, that all have a hand in how this program is operating. So I was able to do that for a few years. And then, but what the one piece of the puzzle I really didn't have as good of a perspective on was the role that CMS was playing at the federal level. It always felt a little like something that was operating behind the curtain, and it didn't have a full insight as to how and why certain decisions were being made. And so I had the opportunity to move to DC and to go to work for CMS. And really a lot of it was, one, just born out of my interest in continuing to serve the program in a different capacity, but also my curiosity as to how that side of the coin looked. And What I discovered was, one, there is an incredible team of incredibly smart, dedicated public servants who are working for the same mission as we were at the state level to make this program work for people, right? And there's a different set of external forces that they face, just as we did at the state level with our legislators and our providers. And that always wasn't, you know, visible to us at the state level. And so coming into CMS and being able to really understand those dynamics, understand the depth of commitment and talent of the folks at the agency and the challenges that they faced, I found I could really serve as sort of a translator between the two worlds and help to begin to further bridge any divide that may have existed. And I think now that we've seen, you know, I think several administrations across several different parties and continuing to have folks in that role that have come with that state experience, I think that has been so important and just further building that partnership and building understanding between these agencies. And I definitely think the perspectives of each kind of give you a better sense of what the others are dealing with. And I'm really looking forward to hearing from Drew about how his federal experience is now shaping his approach to state program leadership, because I came at it the other way. So I think this is going to be a great conversation.
So Drew, welcome.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. And I think it's so interesting. Calder and I sort of started in similar worlds with being very legislative focused, where my first job out of law school in upstate New York was actually in the New York State Senate. And so, you know, I was being liaised by people like Calder, as well as advocates and cross-chamber arm wrestling and information flow or not flowing from the executive. And so really learning it sort of in that Caldera was really an incredible opportunity out of law school. But I really only spent a couple of years there before I moved to Delaware, and I joined the Medical Society of Delaware. And so I hopped from the legislative branch into nonprofits and advocacy, and really got to see the world from, okay, now I'm going to try to ask other people to pull levers on behalf of patients. And so I spent about 10 years working on physician policy and advocacy, which gave me just an amazing breadth and depth into all corners of medicine. And halfway through that time, I actually sort of psyched myself up again and took another bar exam and passed the Delaware bar and then joined a law firm in Delaware and brought the Medical Society with me. And so I continued to do all of that advocacy with them, but then got to see behind the curtain from a legal sense where, especially with small practices, how do they exist in the landscape? How do they keep their doors open? How do they keep their lights on? All the things and pressures that they have just for keeping patient time. And so helping them with employment law, helping them with insurance contracts, and then at the same time, translating those difficulties down to Dover, to Legislative Hall, and saying, you know, we could probably make this a little bit easier for people. And then after seeing the world through that lens, kind of had a similar experience to Calder's of like, well, like what is behind the federal curtain? You know, I heard as an advocate so many times going to my Medicaid program, hey, why can't we do this or why can't we do that? And then going kind of, ah, shucks, like we wish we could, but so, you know, CMS says we can't. And I was like, no, really, what does CMS say? And so, you know, was very, very glad to have the opportunity to join the Division of Managed Care Policy at the time, which then did spin off into its own group, the Managed Care Group. And Calder was the director. So this is actually fantastic for me because CMS actually has a wonderful culture that we can get into later where leadership meetings are most of the time open. And so we were in a hybrid environment. And so, you know, I'm just this GS-13 kind of down there doing the grunt work on state directed payments, but I could sit in on these meetings and I could hear the conversations and the policymaking. And so like I've seen Calder for thousands of hours. It's amazing to be here and be able to see him now. And it really, you know, learned a lot about leadership, watching people like Calder and watching the group directors at CMS, like really just some of the most incredibly bright and dedicated people I've ever been around until I came back to Delaware at the end of 2023 and got into the trenches of state level Medicaid and did see that the same people that we were worried about and are worried about in Middletown, Delaware are beneficiaries, knowing that I was in so many meetings that that same person was also on the minds of people like Calder and people like me, where it's that same person. It is a duly administered program. It's not like there's a separate Delaware Medicaid beneficiary and a separate federal Medicaid beneficiary. We were all trying to help that person get the access to the best quality care possible. And so I consider myself sort of well-rounded on a bit of a whirlwind path, but people tell me this is the most fun and best job I've had in my life. And I think it's probably like when you have little kids and everyone says, oh, enjoy it, when they're not letting you sleep. And it's like, yeah, well, I'm dying right now. But yeah, in 10 years, it'll feel great. No, but it really is an honor. And it is an incredible experience. And there is just remarkable work to be done for the benefit of so many people. And I'm honored to be a part of that here in Delaware.
So given your experience, we want to dig into kind of your view or your perspective on the federal state partnership. And I think that's where you bring some really unique insight to the table. So we'll start with you, Drew. Can you provide us a little bit of insight into how you view the state federal partnership and the key components to maintaining a constructive relationship?
Yeah, I think probably the biggest takeaway and the best message is that how collaborative it can be and should be. That as I said, we are all working towards the benefit of the same people. And there were so many meetings that I was shocked to be in how far CMS would go to help a state get to that goal. That I think from the outside, as I mentioned, from the advocacy side, there are a lot of times where it's like, oh, shucks, CMS won't let us do it. But when I was in CMS, CMS would bend over backwards and jump through hoops and do everything it possibly could to help a state get to its goals. To the extent that I was also in some meetings where some Medicaid directors would be like, please just tell us no. it's okay. and so, you know, it really is a resource that when you... It is a technical field. It's very hard sometimes to move the ball. But as a state and being on the ground, being able to know that you can and should knock on CMS's door and saying, this is where I'm trying to go. Please help me get there. Or like the legislature is making me do this. And I know you understand that because Congress is making you do that. And we're all trying to do things that we don't have a lot of control over. Please help us get there. It really was amazing that we would field those calls all the time, and the leadership up and down from Calder's level through the groups and through the divisions would really go way out of their way to try to help states get there. And so I think that's probably the biggest thing is that it really is a collaborative relationship. If you take the time to pick up the phone and ask them, where we saw states get into trouble is where they didn't do that. And they just sort of tossed in an authority and said, good luck. And then those were harder conversations because you had to unring some bells. But really, if you can communicate frequently, especially on bigger projects, and just get in the door early, and really engage in technical assistance on the front end and throughout. And as different things pop up and different barriers, because these ideas iterate and CMS understands that, being able to have those conversations will help you get to a product that you're confident is approvable by the time you actually officially submit it. And so really just the technical assistance at CMS, again, is just outstanding, and the people there are truly brilliant.
So it sounds like keeping the lines of communication open is really critical to a healthy partnership, right? Calder, curious to know your perspective.
It is a partnership, and I think we just talked about the importance of understanding that we're approaching that partnership with a similar intent, right, and a similar commitment to the mission of the program. But it is also important to recognize that we do have different roles to play in the administration of the program. And there is a natural, healthy, and appropriate tension that should exist between the states and the federal government. There is an oversight role that CMS plays in the administration of the program to ensure it's being administered in accordance with federal law, to ensure that federal dollars are being claimed and spent appropriately. And that's appropriate and that should exist, but that shouldn't get in the way of the work that states can do in close consultation with CMS to advance good policy. And I think to do that, it begins with, as you said, communication, honesty, early engagement, being really clear about what you're trying to achieve and letting CMS and the folks there help you find the best path toward achieving those goals. And, you know, in many cases, that engagement, that early engagement, and that advocacy that you may engage in with CMS as a state leader will help them to make better policy. And to help them push them to consider things they haven't considered before and look for pathways to get to a yes answer on something you're trying to do. But it's also important to recognize that there are limitations to where CMS is going to be able to go. And I think when we have these conversations between state and federal leaders, we should begin with an assumption of good intent, that we're all trying to get to a good answer and trying to help each other. But sometimes there are going to be roadblocks. There are going to be roadblocks in the statute. There are going to be roadblocks in the views of policy officials. There are going to be roadblocks in how other partners within the federal government may be viewing the same issue that CMS is looking at. Just like state leaders that are dealing with legislators and governors and advocates and providers, CMS also has a whole alphabet soup of other federal agencies that are engaging in the policymaking process, both within HHS and at the White House, as well as oversight forces from Congress, from the OIG, from the GAO, all of which are paying close attention and applying scrutiny to what's happening. And it's important that in one of the frustrations that I had at the state level before coming to CMS was not really being able to see that and not being able to understand when things were not moving or weren't getting clarity of policy, knowing that, well, that's actually because CMS has been waiting 6 months for the Office of the General Counsel to opine on the legality of this policy, or OMB has been holding up this waiver because they have some issues with the budget neutrality calculation. And CMS is never going to tell states that this is held up at OMB or this is held up at OGC. And they shouldn't, because CMS has to protect the trust that they hold with those other agencies in order for them to be able to help states get advance policy, in order for them to be able to advance policy. So we operate as one federal team and communicate as one federal team. But it's important to recognize that it's a complicated team, sometimes with different interests and different sort of equities and policies. And it's a messy process sometimes and a lengthy process for that to play itself out. But it's important to engage early and just be, you know, communicative about what you're trying to achieve.
To build on your point, you use the description of translator. I'm wondering if you can think of some specific examples of the way when you were at the federal level with the experience you had at the state, what kind of ways would you use information to translate to the federal partners? And Drew, we'll come back to you to think, you know, when you come in your day-to-day tensions that folks at Delaware's Medicaid experience things, how are you translating things from that federal experience? Can you give us a little insight about, you know, what does that look like in practice?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I think one of the areas in which when I was at CMS and we were engaging with states, you know, across the political spectrum, right? And with governors of varying ideologies and approaches to the program. And what really tried to kind of have a sort of policy of being accessible and transparent to everybody and to be able to help support about getting folks where they want to get within the sort of legal and policy parameters we could work with it. And sometimes it was helpful for me to be able to engage staff and be able to talk about what may be driving a particular policy goal that a state has that may on its surface feel like something that is sort of contrary to the policy intent that we're trying to pursue, but may be actually enabling them to get to a place that we would collectively want them to be, right? Because they have legislators who are interested in certain things or other folks that want to see certain parameters put in place, that that's necessary for them to be able to advance something. And so sometimes we have to look at the bigger picture and understand what dynamics may be in play in a given state that may look very different from another state, very different from what, you know, we live inside the Beltway. And so I think just, you know, kind of helping folks understand what those environments look like and where folks would be coming from would help us engage them in a different way on those issues.
And on the state level, you know, coming from CMS into the trenches as a state, one of the big things that I was able to bring was a sense that CMS is not a monolith. And that just because one person at CMS has knocked on your door for something doesn't mean that you can't go knock on another door for another thing, or you should be scared of them, and that not all CMS contact is, oh my goodness, what have we done wrong now? And that it really is a, yes, there is, as Calder mentioned, a healthy tension of oversight, that they have an obligation to make sure that federal dollars are being spent wisely. We should be prepared to help them in that, and we should have some empathy in that because we understand, because we have our own state audits that have to get done. And so everyone has this shared obligation for that tax dollar, be it a state tax dollar or a federal tax dollar, knowing that we all have to be accountable for and responsible with those funds. But that there are other parts of CMS that are knocking on the door because they want to help you do something, or mutually that you should be able to go knock on that door. That just because FMG is shaking their finger at you over some 2023 pharmacy thing, that doesn't mean you shouldn't be able to go talk on or knock on MCG's door to talk about a preprint, or that you should be scared to pick up the phone and call leadership and talk through another issue. Because there really was a sense of it might be better to be off of CMS's radar and we'll just kind of run quiet for a little bit, and really trying to bring to the state, like, no, we really should be loud and we need to be talking to them. We should be bringing issues early and often. We should be saying, hey, we're running across this thing. We're not really sure how to get out of it. We don't want to dig the hole any deeper. You know, how do we work with you to come into whatever compliance is expected of us? I think that's really, really important.
CMS is not, it just as any state Medicaid program, I'm sure we can both agree, is not without its faults sometimes, right? And I know it's been a shared frustration of many state leaders that sometimes it felt like there was inconsistency in how certain policies were being applied from state to state, right? From region to region. And that can breed a lot of frustration, I think, among states, or that you are hearing different things out of different parts of CMS. And I think we've collectively across several administrations have made a lot of effort to try and address a lot of that through reorganizing some of the divisions and bringing them together around certain policy areas rather than having sort of regions operating more independently. When I got to CMS, the regional staff actually didn't even report up to the CMCS director. They reported up into a separate regional organization with CMS. So it was not surprising that you were getting very different approaches to certain types of state plan amendments or managed care contracts from region to region. I think the reorg that was done and the centralization of some of that helped address some of that. But I'm sure that continues to be a challenge that everyone has to struggle through, right? And sometimes the role of the senior leaders, both the senior career leaders and the senior policy officials, is to be able to take that step back and see that bigger picture of all of the different sort of policies that may be impacting a state or may be going on in a state, and helping to sort of broker a pathway forward, right? There may be a disallowance on the table that we need to address because there is this longstanding payment issue. At the same time, there's an 1115 in front of us. At the same time, they've been paying something without state plan authority. We got to figure out how to put a package together that addresses all of that because their governor's calling the White House and we got to find a solution. So, you know, that is part of that job of being able to look at the big picture and work with states and try to find a path forward while still making sure we're upholding our program oversight responsibility.
Yeah, I think those are great points. And to piggyback off of the piggyback, talking about bringing the centralized structure away from the regions to try to have better messaging out. I think that on the ground level inside of CMS, like, we spent a lot of time trying to make sure that we were fair and trying to make sure that, you know, we have 56 Medicaid programs, and especially in directed payments, the main team that I was on. We really, really tried to make sure that we weren't falling into politics one way or the other. Like, we really held our procedures tightly to make sure that we were judging everybody by the same criteria, that we were putting everybody on the same timelines, that we were trying to make everybody subject to the same process and the same sometimes struggles sort of fairly. And so, you know, we lived and died by our SOP, by our standard operating procedure. You know, and we, if we made any tweaks, we made sure we wrote it down. And then we had to make sure that we were sending things out to our federal partners consistently and that we weren't short shrifting them either. Because something that Calder mentioned before is that trust in between CMCS and for like OACT or OMB or even inside of the center with DQ or there's again, all the alphabet soup of federal. But the point is that there's trust inside of your federal partnerships as well. And if you are not following your sort of stated rules and bargains with them on when they can have input on the authority work that you're doing, that can quickly fall apart. And that will then trickle down to unfairness and disparities in states. And so we worked really, really hard to make sure that we were fair and that we were following the process. And that was, I think, very important.
The next question really deals with kind of a timely topic around leadership change. Leadership changes at both the federal and state levels can influence expectations around the relationship between the two parties, as well as approaches to certain types of decision making, as we all know. What are the fundamental components of the state-federal partnership that really remain consistent regardless of leadership changes? And Calder, do you want to kick it off?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that question, Jamie. I mean, we should always begin with that assumption of good intent. Good intent doesn't always mean good policy, or at least it doesn't necessarily mean policy that's going to be consistent with the policy agenda of your boss or your given administration, right? But transparency and collaborative, communication and really trying to work to see what you can do is, I think, at the foundation of being able to move that forward. And I do think that approach should be consistent, right, from administration to administration. You know, I think in terms of things that we see that do remain consistent, going back to something I said earlier, right, there is that sort of oversight role that CMS plays in sort of the administration of the program. And we have to, regardless of who's in power, ensure that we're following the appropriate administrative processes and that are prescribed by law. We can't act arbitrarily or capriciously in setting forth new policy or how we approve different things. So we have to go through a deliberative policy-making process that's often slow. That's often, not going to allow for quick action around moving the ship in a different direction. And that's one of the things I really appreciate about the role that the senior career leadership plays is I found, that they were offering really great advice for how to achieve the policy goals that we were trying to achieve. It would often require, again, a deliberative process under which we undertake rulemaking, notice and comment periods, guidance out to states, right, to say we're going to move in a different direction. And that's an important part of the process. Democracy is messy. One party to the next is going to mean a change in direction, but we've got to be deliberative about that. We've got to communicate what we're doing. And it's still, that takes time. And it's going to take time when there's a change in administration for staff to get in place, for those relationships to form, for them to undergo those administrative processes. And things are going to slow down during that time period while they get sort of their rhythm in place and they get some of those things established. And that's consistent, I think, from one administration to the next.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more because I joined CMCS at the end of the first Trump administration. So got to see that transition into the Biden administration. And there was almost a parallel time where from the staff level, we were also not able to communicate, mostly because it was deference to bringing new leadership in, helping them, find the proverbial bathroom, letting them figure out how their staffing and flow is going to work. And so it wasn't untoward. It was just part of a transition. And we felt it again this time. And it was interesting because then I left CMCS and came to the state level and watched a governor transition and seeing our own governor transition is the same thing where people want answers, where I get advocates knocking on the door being like, hey, does the governor support XYZ? And it's like, I don't think the governor knows I'm here yet. Like, let's just wait a moment. There's a lot going on. There are a lot of big things that are moving. And so just recognizing that at the end of the day, people are human and it's going to take a little time for big structures to kind of come into line with a new executive and just remembering to be patient. And then to sort of cite the incomparable Anne-Marie Costello, I mean, there's always core work that moves. She's just an incredible advocate that even though there's any time of a lot of noise or cacophony, the core work of Medicaid continues to move. State plan amendments, contracts, rates, the things that are like 90% of our work, CMCS works really, really hard to make sure that continues to operate and that your program will run. I think maybe the sort of elephant in the room is just 1115s. I mean, those are just a lot of discretion and those do change. Those don't necessarily have all the same rules and regs as everything else does that do remain very structured. So I don't see a lot of way to say like, yes, there are going to be changes to 1115s. I just think that is. But remembering that's not the bulk of what we do. Like, it's interesting, but the bulk of the program is continuing to move, is continuing to get technical support, is continuing to move through CMCS and continue to be implemented at the state level. And that's the most important stuff from our perspective, because even though it might not be the stuff that grabs the headlines, that's what the people on the ground, that's what the beneficiaries fundamentally need.
Something you mentioned, I think, is really important, which is the 1115 piece. It's important to remember, while the 1115 work in many ways over the last several years has become perhaps a little bit more routine than it originally was, in the sense that we now have more sort of guidance and templates and processes around it. It is the primary tool by which an administration can sort of exert it's policy preferences on the programming. And it's the waivers are completely at the discretion of the secretary. And you know, there are parameters, right, in law. We've seen that through litigation, that there are things that can and can't happen there. But a CMS can choose to not even engage in 1115 application if it's not in alignment with their policy priorities. So I think it is important to that point for states to be paying close attention to the policy priorities that are being set forth by leadership and think about ways that the things that they want to do can align to them, and that they can kind of come in and tell a story about how their objectives are actually aligned to the goals that the president or the secretary or the administrator has set forth, right? And keep in mind, remember that it does take time for those folks to all get into place. And even once they do, it takes time for them to figure out where the bathroom is, let alone how to put out guidance on 1115s.
Fantastic insight. Well, thank you so much, Calder and Drew, for joining us today. I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Mark, to offer some observations regarding today's discussion.
One thing that stands out to me about our conversation today is that a theme of our podcast is really about leadership in the public sector. And you highlight a lot of the challenge of being effective in that space. It's designed in ways to have conflict between different roles that are played. And you two are great examples of those roles aren't identities, right? You were the same person when you played one role versus another, driven by the same desire to serve members well. And at the same time, there is a real importance around collaboration. And in a world where we can get very focused on the difference as opposed to the commonality, I appreciate that we can get driven to think we're on team state, we're on team federal. And you remind us of the importance of reaching out with goodwill across those curtains to really think about what does it mean to serve 80 million people well and to support their health and well-being. The public sector is inherently challenging in that way. And I appreciate your words of wisdom about how to keep a good perspective and how to keep that work moving, even in times where there's a lot of stuff swirling and there's a lot of things that lead us to think about where things are different as opposed to where we can come together and get things done for folks. I really appreciate your insight today.
Thanks so much, Mark. Well, we are at time. I thank you to all of you for joining us for this episode of the MLE podcast. We encourage you to stay tuned for future episodes and learn from leaders who have been and continue to be critical to shaping the Medicaid program.
This podcast is a collaboration between the Center for Healthcare Strategies and the National Association of Medicaid Directors. It is made possible by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.